Okay, we're here on Conspiranormal, and this is your host, Adam Sane, and it's a little different tonight, actually a lot different. Luke is not here. He has gotten himself yet another job where he has to be there at about 9 o'clock being a night watchman somewhere. So I, and this interview was coming on kind of late, so he was not able to make it tonight. But I have on the line, a guest, Tim Kilkenny. He can kind of fill in, be kind of the co-host for the night as well. He is the host of a great podcast radio show called Revelations Radio News, which is on the Revelations Radio Network. And Tim is really one of those guys that gets in there, digs deep, him and his host Andrew Hoffman, who was on this show back last year in September. And I believe that's like episode 11 or 12, something like that. This is going to be episode 30. So it's been a while since we've had Andrew on. But I just wanted to welcome Tim to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for that welcome, I guess, the kind words. I guess we try to look deep. Sometimes it feels like we're just two guys joking about the current news stories and putting it out.
Well, I enjoy the show, and I enjoy the kind of like rapport that you and Andrew have, and I enjoy the sass and the sarcasm. And Andrew usually inserting, and yourself usually inserting things into articles that. And I just wanted to ask you, kind of starting off, Tim, tell us about Revelations Radio News. Tell us about what kind of inspired you to do that project. How did it all come together for you and Andrew?
Well, I have to take the credit. I am the originator of the awesome name Revelations Radio News, which is really, really creative, considering it was meant to be on the Revelations Radio Network. But we just put it on there as a news thing. I think that the Revelations Radio Network played a big role in both Andrew and my lives in many different ways, kind of waking us up to not only conspiracy and government sort of things and whatnot, and kind of the spiritual side of things as well. And Andrew was a you've already talked to Andrew. I was just kind of asleep at the wheel, I guess. Kind of like as they say, when did you wake up? And I watched, I think it was Freedom to Fascism or something like that, followed by The Money Masters, and then just kind of started to realize that the world maybe wasn't what I thought. And during that search, ran into Frank Lordy and Chris White, and was kind of really influenced by the Revelations Radio Network. So, that kind of woke me up. And after a few years of, digesting and consuming the media, I just suddenly got an idea, maybe I should start producing some. And I did a different show, totally different kind of show, called the Tim and Mike Show, that was way more kind of spiritually based, and it was just kind of about like average Christian walk, not a lot of conspiracy, but just a little bit of prayer, just talking about your average day and being in the world. It was almost like church for conspiracy minded, but sure. Wasn't necessarily, we always cover conspiracy, so
yeah,
it's definitely a weird, or not weird, it's definitely just a unique show. If I had to classify it, I wouldn't be able to. It was interesting, and that went on for about a year and a half, 60 episodes, something like that. And in the middle of that, I just kind of got the idea, I had already been doing that podcast, but that one was kind of leaning more towards the spiritual side, prayer, daily walk and stuff. And I just felt like I had some stuff to say about what was going on in the news, as far as the conspiracies. And there's no shortage of people who call themselves conspiracy theorists out there and put out they basically just scare people. It's like, oh my gosh, this is oh my god, it's time to panic, this is
buy some seeds.
Yeah, exactly. Right. There's no shortage of that sort of stuff on YouTube and on the podcasts, where it's just all fear, fear, fear. And I wanted to take a more analytical view of it. And so, naturally, I have met Andrew Hoffman at the Last Days conference and a couple other times. I mean, he lives up here in the Northwest and whatnot. I'm out of Seattle, just north of Seattle, and he's over there across the mountains in eastern Washington. But, you know, I thought, well, he's super analytical, and I just, you know, dropped him a line. Hey, here's what I'm thinking about doing. Would you be interested in doing it? I think it might be better to go at it, you know, just a little bit, you know, with two different people. That way we can have the dialogue back and forth and whatnot. And he was like, yeah, I really want to. And I was shocked by that. I was like, oh, I thought he'd be too busy and stuff. But he had been, you know, putting off writing a book and just wasn't getting his stuff out there either. So we just decided to kind of team up and do it. And Revelations Radio News is definitely an exercise in growth in podcasting, because when it started, it was, I didn't know anything about audio editing. You know, the first show, Tim and Mike's show, was live, so it was just kind of recorded on TalkShoe, and that was it. And this one, it's definitely, if you go back and listen to, like, the very first episode, you know, I'm sure that there's, you know, horrible buzzing noises, and hey, maybe even last week's episode has horrible buzzing noises and bad audio, but... You know, I'm trying to move it along. I feel like it's moving in a good direction, and it's reaching new people. I guess it's kind of growing, but it's still, it's more has a really loyal following than super popular. So that's something that we definitely keep in mind. And yeah, I mean, it's just kind of an analytical view of the conspiracies without all the fear and from a Christian perspective. We're not trying to fill the shoes of, you know, there's a lot of these sort of shows out there, or was, for instance, Future Quake, probably, you know, each of our favorite. Yeah. Chris White used to kind of do a lot of the same stuff. Frank Lordy. You know, we're not trying to fill any of those shoes, but we're just trying to kind of forge our own way and make our own kind of, yeah, make our own kind of view or direction.
Future Quake is kind of our common origin, Tim.
Yeah,
I've structured a lot of, like, the way my show is structured, I actually just lifted straight from Future Quake, so.
Well, you and me both, brother, because yeah. That show, yeah, I can't say enough about that show, and I've gone on about it, but, you know, not here, so I'll do it again. Yeah. But that had everything. I mean, it had everything from a Christian perspective. It had conspiracies. It had spiritual. It had dissenting opinions. It had, I mean, it had everything. And I really enjoyed it. I think it was a great gift while we had it. And really respect Dr. Futures. You know, that's another exercise in podcast growth that's kind of amazing from start to finish, you know.
Yeah, because absolutely.
In the early episodes, you know, I've put out better episodes than some of them, but the early ones, but at the end, it's like, I mean, they're just amazing. They had it down to a science. The rapport back and forth was hilarious. The guests were wide ranging and all knowledgeable. Dr. Future, to this day, I don't think I've found, you know, Derek Gilbert's a pretty good interviewer as well, but I think to this day, Dr. Future is one of the best interviewers I know of. Numerous times when he was interviewing people, he would say, you know, what about this? And they would be like, you know, I never thought of that, but that's interesting. And so, yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, he definitely has a very analytical mind. He was actually the first guest on this show.
Perfect.
I talked him into being the guest, and he's come on your show quite a lot, I think, and actually recently.
Yeah. Yeah, I listened to that first show you guys did with him, and I enjoyed that quite immensely. And yeah, you know, our shows with him are very off the cuff, not his traditional Future Quake show, because we kind of keep it relaxed a little more than he did. He had to, but you know, I learned so much of my professionalism from him. You know, how to send, you know, interview questions to bigger guests beforehand, and how to, you know, I just learned a lot from him. So yeah,
right. You know, and two, I know what you're saying about the, you know, kind of you learning as you go, you know, as doing this podcast. You know, I used to have someone else edit it, and then I kind of had to just take that over. And it's actually Dr. Future that showed me how to do that. And, you know, it's all been kind of intuitive, trying to, you know, just kind of figure things out here and there and working with it. So I know what you mean as far as all that goes. It's kind of like a development.
For sure, for sure. Autodidacticism is a word that James Corbett pointed out. It's teaching yourself how to do things, and that's my favorite way to learn, actually.
I kind of like to talk, Tim, about kind of like your own kind of personal spiritual path and kind of how that's reflected in some of your ideas about, you know, the conspiracy theories that are going on in the world. Mm-hmm. Such as, like, you used to be in the, I believe, in the Navy.
Yes, I did. I was in the Navy from, when was that? 99 till about 2005, I think it was. 2004, 2005.
All the way through 9/11 and into the Iraq War. And
yeah, very interesting perspective. Yeah, I mean, just a very interesting path there. I was just gonna say, like, so much stuff changed just in that short amount of time. Like, just an off the cuff example, when I joined the military and was stationed up here in Washington, that's how I got up here. I'm originally from Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. We would go on base, and sometimes there would be a guard at the gate, and you have to show your ID. But other times there wouldn't, or you could just walk right in.
Hmm.
Yeah, and by the time I left, there was like enormous barricade with armed guards, and it was just a very interesting time to be in the military.
Yep. And it kind of like, would you say that 9/11 kind of changed, like looking into kind of like the events of September 11th, did you think that kind of changed some of your attitudes about all that?
You know, let me think about that. I don't think it did, because I was as asleep as anyone else, I think, at that point. I mean, I was asleep enough to join in the first place. You know, I joined, and it wasn't necessarily like, oh, I got to go fight for my country. It was kind of just, you know, I'm not sure what to do next. Need some money for college. You know, this seems like a decent route. It's respectable. I can at least put off, you know, deciding what my career is going to be, and then kind of joined up. And then, you know, when 9/11 happened, I was on a base up here in Everett, or in Washington here in Bremerton, in the shipyards, and we watched it all unfold on television. And you know, I bought it, you know, I pretty much just bought it, and
me too.
Yeah, and just, you know, hook, line, and sinker, that was what really, you know, happened. And I don't know, trauma-based, mind controlled through the whole traumatic event. It's kind of kind of conspiratorial, but I think that they've perfected, you know, I think the media has perfected how to inflict trauma on the viewer.
Sure.
And, you know, they did a heck of a job there, because, I mean, it becomes months before even the most awake of us woke up. So, anyway, yeah, so that all happened, and, you know, it was like, what are we going to do? You know, we're in the military, what are we going to do? And it's like, we got to go get those guys, you know, we're going to go get them. And it was kind of scary looking back, because it wasn't necessarily directed at anybody, just like, we gotta do something, you know. And so that's kind of where I was at that, after the whole 9/11 deal.
Yeah, and you weren't one of the guys that kind of joined the military, you were already in it, you know. And I think it just made it even more, that you were even more gung-ho after that.
Yeah,
no, I'll tell you, I had always kind of been with, you know, conspiracy theories, and knowing that, you know, things like the JFK stuff and all that, and knowing that, you know, there was always some kind of evil element within the United States government, or, you know, in the world. And 2001 was before I'd become, you know, a Christian, and so I didn't have the kind of the same worldview that I have now. But, you know, I bought it. You know, I thought there were some weird things involved, like, you know, possibly they shot down the Flight 93. Mm-hmm. But I didn't think, you know, I just thought, you know, I just took it straightforward. And it wasn't until about, say, 2006 that I started looking into it and thinking, you know, hey, there's something wrong here with this whole thing, you know. And so I began to really look back on that and say, you know, hey, this is just like the Kennedy stuff. This is just like anything else. You know, there's really nothing different. You know, especially as, like, you know, the war with Iraq seemed to kind of go south too, you know.
Yeah.
How is your, like, you know, your faith, you know, as a Christian, You know, how's that, when you look at kind of like these conspiracy theories and these things that have happened, these kind of evil things, I mean, how has that influenced like your viewpoint on those?
You know, it led me back, if that makes any sense. I was raised in a pretty Christian area. In Oklahoma, it's a revolutionary act to say that you're not a Christian.
Sure.
That makes you the weirdo.
Yeah, I'm not saying, understand.
What's that?
I can understand, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not saying everyone is, but you at least say it. You know, you at least say that you're a Christian. So, but anyway, so I kind of drifted away from that and wanted to, you know, kind of forge my own path and, you know, join the military, did all this stuff. So, when I got out and, you know, I think I was about a year or so later than you, maybe about, I think it was late 2007, somewhere in 2007 area, watched Freedom to Fascism and then Money Masters, like I said, and started to kind of wake up to, the idea of this, you know, conspiracy of money and all this other stuff. And what it did was it actually led me back to Christ. And I wouldn't recommend this road to anybody, but I know it definitely worked, you know, for me. But I found myself pretty much just looking at some of the darkest conspiracies.
Yeah.
Talking about satanic ritual abuse, trauma-based mind control, Bohemian Grove sacrifices, stuff like that. And, you know, because I kept digging, and the more and more I dug, the more and more it made sense. You know, and, you know, it starts off like, oh, income tax is not, you know, legal, and we shouldn't be paying it, and this is all kind of a big scam. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, you're looking at Bohemian Grove and, you know, the Franklin scandal.
Yeah, the Franklin cover-up, yeah.
Yeah, the Franklin cover-up is one of the formative ones for me, for sure. I started to try and get to the bottom of that, and it's like, it's filthy. I mean, it's hard to even repeat what, you know, what happens in a cover-up in a situation like that. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I think that I started to kind of have a dissociation or a confusion about people can't be this evil, right? I mean, this is really, really evil. How can this possibly be? And I think at that point, it is actually very dangerous to kind of, or not dangerous, but at least very possible to believe, you're going to laugh, but David Icke's version of reality.
Yeah.
Because the actions that these people take, you know, with, you know, satanic ritual abuse, abusing children, you know, I actually just came out that the Jimmy Savile, over 350 more people have come forward, or women have come forward in the UK, saying that this pop star who died last year at 84, you know, had molested them at the BBC.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
It's
absolutely amazing.
Yeah, 350 more in a year at a very, very public institution.
And it hardly gets any press here in the United States.
No, exactly. And so, that is evil. I mean, that is really, really evil. It's hard to comprehend how evil that is. And I was struggling with that sort of thing. And like I said, that's where David Icke almost makes some sense. You know, it does kind of make some sense out of the situation. Like, they're not even human. They're just like some sort of lizard people or something like that. And of course, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. But it's easier to believe than people are that bad. And so I thought, you know, I never went down the David Icke road, but like I said, I have a little sympathy for him because I could see how you'd go that way. But I really dug down to the point where I was disturbed. I mean, I think I looked at too much of this stuff. And I was very, very disturbed by it. And I started to kind of realize, well, you know, if there's these huge, you know, elite families at the top, you know, the word Illuminati is absolutely overused these days. But if but if there are a certain group, because the further I dug into it, the more it tied back to these same group of families. And then some rituals, and they're getting direct orders from something on the spiritual side. And that's when my childhood a little kicked in, you know, and not the fake, you know, I'm a Christian, of course, you know, the kind of fake Disney-fied Christianity where you just say it and do whatever you want.
Yeah.
But the real Christianity kind of kicked in. My knowledge of the Bible that I had learned as a child in church, yeah, something from the other side is communicating with these people, and it does hate humanity that much, and these people are serving it, and that makes total sense. Like, that actually makes a whole bunch of sense. And then, so by the time I started to kind of process that, I realized very quickly, I was like, well, it's a very short time before I'm going to become a Christian then, because this, you know, this all makes way too much sense. I had to go and actually see the dark side, and that it was actually very real, you know. And I think that that is a big, missing piece of the modern day church, at least in the U.S., in that they don't often talk about spiritual things, you know, and they don't often talk about that the devil, you know, he roams the earth seeking whom he may devour, that there is a conspiracy, worldwide conspiracy, you know, to deny Christ and to bring people to the lowest, you know, point that they can, by entities that absolutely hate humanity like a bad taste in their mouth. And once I started to see conspiracy and see all of these different conspiracies throughout different aspects of life, from government to news to these families to the banking elite to all this stuff. And then to find out, you know, they're doing these rituals to communicating with another spirit or communicating with the spiritual realm. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, I get it. That makes sense. You know, and I just kind of never turned back from there, and slowly kind of turned to Christ for the answer. And I didn't have, you know, a lot of people have a conversion experience where they'll just say a prayer or whatever, and it'll be a real turning point. Mine was kind of a gradual coming back to it.
Yeah.
But it was a different way. It was through the... almost like an analytical trip through the conspiracy realm, if I can say that.
I'd have to say, you know, it was kind of the same way for me as far as, like, me becoming a Christian was, it was a gradual thing. You know, I just gradually had to, you know, kind of figure things out for myself. And it's interesting that you bring up David Icke in that, because he's kind of, him and a few other people, you know, our common friend Chris White, you know, talks about how those guys are kind of another system of control. Mm-hmm. Because they will say stuff about, you know, hey, there's the Illuminati and they're doing these rituals and they're abusing children. And like you said, you know, they're all, David Icke talks about the reptilians and all this. But at the same time, then he'll say something like, well, you know, I'm God, and hey, you guys are God, and, you know, just kind of bringing this kind of old Gnosticism into the mix. So it's just another form, that's kind of a trap in and of itself, of kind of playing to the kind of conspiracy theory crowd, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they say it all, you know, it's kind of an overused metaphor, but
yeah.
Rat poison's 98% good.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Ancient Aliens kind of crowd, you know.
Exactly.
I wanted to ask you too, Tim, about, you know, kind of, you know, we kind of covered this a little bit, but, you know, kind of like your views on the paranormal, because that's one of the things that we talk about on this show. We'll talk about ghosts, and we'll talk about, you know, alien abductions and all kind of weird stuff. And, you know, what's kind of your, like, you know, viewpoint on all that? No, I'm probably putting you on the spot.
No, it's fine. It's fun to kind of think about this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't put it into words often, but I believe it's a lot more prevalent than we give, you know, credit or credence to.
Yeah.
Our show focuses on the, you know, the news, and it's a lot more literal. But yeah, we
what
definitely
you would say is politics, really, and kind of the politics of the hidden, you know.
Exactly, and yeah. I think sometimes I feel the need to kind of bring more of the paranormal stuff into it, because it's very real. You know, people people don't just abuse children because it's fun or something like this. Like they do that sort of thing because they actually get power from other entities by doing it. It's a deal that you sign on for. You go do this horrible thing and you can get power. And I think that that's the sort of thing that, you know, these people, you know, the elite or whatever are into. I think as far as day-to-day life, the paranormal is very real, and I think that we're in an interesting time because of the modernism or almost postmodernism of our outlook on spiritual things, where if you'd look back at like the Dark Ages or whatever, like what is it, the 9 to the 1200s or something like that, but if you took a villager, you know, some small, common member of society in the UK, for instance, or in England, and brought them and showed them life here and showed them like a movie, you know, or like a music video or whatever, they would immediately point out that's evil because they knew, right? Because they knew that these symbols were bad, you know, that these things were bad, that you're conjuring up spirits, you know, with your shirt or whatever, you know, it's got all these like, you know, different signs on it or whatever. They knew then, you know, they knew whether they believed in, you know, jinns in the Far East, or if they believed in, you know, little trolls or whatever, you know, these are different words for demons. And today, just saying the word demon, which is the modern day version of those things, you know, puts some sort of a label on you. Well, you're not, you know, a realist. And I think we're at just such a dangerous time where not only are Christians, like I was saying, ignoring that there's a spiritual side to these things, but also atheists. And if it can't be proven, you know, the religion of science, right? Evolution and all these things, it doesn't account for a soul. It doesn't account for spirituality. It doesn't account for angels or demons, which are very real and evident in our world, you know, in so many different ways.
You know, the prevalence, one of the things that's interesting is the prevalence of kind of like the ghost shows, you know.
Mm-hmm,
and I've watched that stuff, you know. I've watched it till I'm just about sick of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be a big thing that's like really prevalent in our society right now. It's kind of that need for, you know, something spiritual.
Anything that's spiritual, it doesn't have to do with the Bible.
Yeah.
Anything is on the table.
Right. If it's the Bible, it's a complete... it's like, no, don't go there.
No.
You know? But, I mean, you are right when you say that, you know, there is in the churches, too. You go in there and there's no real emphasis on anything supernatural. You know,
sure.
All the kind of supernatural things have been taken out, and I think that's one of the problems with the at least the church here in America.
Sure, you know, Russ Dizdar talks about, you know, you go in and you say you got these issues to a pastor these days, and he'll send you to a mental health professional. And I'm not saying that mental health professionals are never needed, but we should at least check out some other avenues real quick and rebuke some demons. Because, you know, looking through the Bible, quite often mentally disturbed people needed demons cast out of them. You know, and that's something you just don't hear anymore. I can't tell you the last time I heard a pastor even mention that, you know, such and such person was really down in the depths and was dealing with depression, and then we cast a demon out of them or prayed for them and rebuked any spirit that may be oppressing them, and then they felt better. But I can tell you that that's happened in my own life, in people close to me's life, that, you know, I start feeling oppression. Shoot, it happened to me last week.
Wow.
You know, start feeling some oppression, start feeling hopeless, just stressed out, you know, just kind of lost in my own self. Like, oh, I got to detach myself from the people around me and really think this out. Or, you know, it's weird how your brain works or whatever, but, you know, trying to make up for what's going on in the spiritual realm. And, you know, then I was like, you know, and I talked to a buddy and he was like going through the same thing. And I'm like, man, you know what? We should check this out. You know, if we rebuke a demon and it's not there, then, you know, what do we waste, like 5 minutes? You know, but if we do and it gets better, then we know, hey, you know, we were under, you know, and we did that. We prayed together and we rebuked the demon that seemed to be bothering each of us, and we felt better almost immediately.
Yeah.
and not feel better, like, oh, you know, it's a weird, you know, indescribable feeling or anything like that. It's a presence of the Holy Spirit kind of came back and, hey, you know, everything's gonna be all right, and that reassurance, I guess, kind of came back. So I think that sort of stuff is kind of ignored a little bit these days, and we need to kind of focus more on it, because you know what the atheists are. Yeah. the conspiracy minded people are, you know, the average person is, well, I won't ever believe in the Bible, but you know, I believe in ghosts, or I believe in any of these things like you're talking about.
Right. Yeah, I totally believe in aliens. And you know, that was the one thing for me, Tim, back, you know, when I came into being a Christian, you know, I started believing all this weird kind of stuff. You know, I would believe in, hey, you know, there's aliens and there's all kinds of, there's bases on Mars or whatever, you know, stupid stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking to myself, you know, I believe in all this, but I don't believe that a guy could be killed and then 10 days later rise from the grave.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, it seemed to me there was a little bit of a cognitive dissonance for me, and that's kind of what started the ball rolling. I think it took 4 years to really kind of come to real fruition, but, you know, eventually I did. And
yeah.
And I kind of wanted to address something, too, you know, kind of leading into kind of more of a political avenue. You know, one of the things you guys talk about, and this was prevalent on Future Quake, too, and it's on your show, there's a lot about kind of like there's criticism of kind of the mainstream evangelical church in America, you know, and what do you see some of those problems being, you know, that kind of like that we kind of covered one where we talked about kind of the spiritual stuff being kind of ignored, and I think there's another big problem, which I think is like kind of the support for basically war, you know. What do you see some of those problems as being?
Well, I had to I had an interesting, I'll talk about my friend. I had a friend that kind of came to Christ a few years ago, and he did that. One of the main ways that he was able to do that was because he was able to kind of address the fact that all that he had seen previously as being Christian, quote unquote, you know, like voting Republican and you know, being pro George Bush and pro war in Iraq and all of those things, in different conversations with him, I and maybe, you know, definitely the Holy Spirit were able to separate those things that don't have anything to do with Christianity from Christ himself, and then he was able to say, okay, I can accept this, and he kind of became a Christian. And I think that the mainstream Christian society in our country has co-signed itself onto the Stars and Stripes in a way that is more detrimental to the gospel than almost anything else I can think of. And I know that may sound like an extreme statement, but in our age group, I'm 30, how old am I? 31, 32? you know, anybody under there, and probably right around there, and it's going to say that it has that view, you know, has that view that Christians are these pro-war, pro-state, pro-gay bashing, and it's disgusting. It's disgusting, and it's what turned me off to Christianity as an adolescent, where I just said, you know, I've had enough of all this. This is ridiculous. Yeah. And it wasn't until I was able to, in my own head, separate that and that caricature of Christianity from Christ himself, you know, that I was able to really move forward and kind of turn to him. You know, and I think that that's been shown in a few documentaries, a couple I can think of offhand, but just like one of them, I think, is Lord Save Us From Your Followers, and a couple that are like that, where they're kind of aimed at the non-Christian or Christian, and it just talks about how one of the things that they did in that documentary that was really enlightening was they would interview people on the street, and like 0 out of 100 people said that they didn't like Jesus. no one says that they don't like Jesus, you know, and at least the historical character or whatever they, you know, however they view the person of Jesus, whether he's in their mind fantasy or whatever. No one says they don't like Jesus. But, you know, tons of people don't like Christians. And I think if Christians were really trying to be like Jesus, then that wouldn't be necessarily the case. Now, I'm not saying all Christians are going to be loved. I mean, Jesus said as much that, you know, he wasn't loved, and of course, you know, his followers wouldn't be. But I think that the mainstream evangelical church has signed itself onto the stars and stripes in a patriotic sense that's absolutely despicable and disgusting, and I can't stand it. And that's, I guess, what our show is, I hope, is a testament to, I think Andrew said it a few episodes back, you know, that we're just kind of a show that says, hey, not everybody fell for it. We're not all, you know, pro-war, pro-state, pro whatever this monstrosity is. Yeah, I'm not sure what else to say there.
I think you hear it a lot. I mean, I think you've seen the something that I found that was this cartoon series that Mike Huckabee is endorsing. And it's even to the point, I mean, that's just kind of a silly thing, but it's to the point where, like, history just gets rewritten to say, you know, all of our great leaders have all been Christians, and, you know, Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and John Adams, when there's a lot of proof to say that those guys probably really wanted what you would consider at least mainstream Christian. And so just kind of this rewrite of history that's being done.
Yeah, by charlatans like David Bart, you know,
right.
People who are just out to pad their own pocketbook. Guys like Glenn Beck, you know, who are making, what is he, his new deal that he got for his network is like $100 million a year. He's out there talking about, oh, we got to get back to God, and we got to get our countries in for it. I mean, anyway.
We got to get that heathen Obama out of the White House.
Yeah, the closet Muslim. And the intellect, you know, we've lost the ability to be intellectual, or not the ability, or, I don't know. Mainstream Christianity in America has got a lot of problems. And one of them is we don't exercise, you know, I think William Lane Craig is a great example of somebody who's taking on the intellectual world, you know, with Christianity. Chris White is another great example. He's trying to take on an intellectual view, you know, of Christianity. But, you know, a lot of the rest of Christianity, at least in the U.S., has kind of signed on to, you know, confusing what faith and logical thinking are, and that, yes, we believe in Christ, that he's going to save us through faith. You know, we have faith in that. But it's not like blind faith. There's a lot of evidence to support the Bible and what's in it. And I think that, you know, we so often times as a group anyway, you know, and maybe I shouldn't bash it so much. I mean, I'm part of it, so I need to try and do the best that I can to kind of spread salt and light in my area. But, we just kind of look at it gets lost in faith. In that, instead of thinking through logically, what is patriotism? What is going over to another country and bombing the heck out of them? What does a drone strike really mean? What does double tap actually mean? What does, you know, 100 people in Guantanamo Bay who are on, you know, hunger strike right now, who have been found to be not guilty, still there. What do those things mean, and why aren't, you know, why don't we care? Why are we just waving the flag and, you know, talking about rah, rah, rah? You know, it's in a way, it's not only just Christianity in mainstream, but it's just American public as a whole, you know, and it's just kind of been, the line has been blurred, where it's like, you know, Memorial Day, what's Memorial Day? Well, it's supposed to be a celebration of the dead people who have died in war previously, but now it's like, wave your flag even higher and support your troops, whatever that means.
Yeah. And I think that's a good segue into something that you've been talking about, is Thomas Young.
Yeah.
The wounded soldier that, I don't know the updates on him, actually, and what has happened, but you kind of go over that. I mean, I think he's someone that is indicative of someone that, you know, here's this guy, he's pretty much about to die, and he's completely just disgusted with Christianity because of what he sees as the connection to, you know, George W. Bush and going to war. And I think he's a perfect case of just how, you know, someone can become completely disgusted or, you know, with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for those that don't know, Thomas Young is a veteran of the Iraq War. He joined just after September 11th. You know, those people attacked us. I'm going to go fight for my country.
Yeah.
Is immediately, or not immediately, but shortly out thereafter, sent to Iraq. He didn't want to go to Iraq. He knew he wasn't going to go to Iraq. He didn't want to go to Iraq. He knew he wasn't going to go to Afghanistan, but he didn't want to go to Iraq. But he did in order to serve his country. And unfortunately, I think it was, gosh, it's such a short time. I want to say a week, maybe a month into his you know, time in Iraq, he gets hit with his Humvee or Hummer got hit with a missile strike or some sort of car bombing or something like this. And he ends up paralyzed. So he comes home and gets in touch with a few anti-war people, joins Iraq Veterans Against the War, which I'm also a member of or whatever, and you know, gets in touch, a few people get in touch with him, maybe Phil Donahue, and they go and make this movie called Body of War, and it just talks about the negative effects of the Iraq War and how he is coping with life being paralyzed. And I haven't actually got a chance to view the movie, but then from there, things kind of take a turn for the worse. You know, they start to really get bad for him. He had, a stroke sometime last summer, and has really just started to lose a lot of his motor functions and whatnot that he had. Now, as I understand it, he was paralyzed from the legs down. But now he's starting to kind of lose even the function of his upper torso.
Right.
And
he's just degenerated, really.
Yeah, it's been absolutely degenerative and sad to watch. But, you know, unfortunately, I didn't know. It's sad to watch because I went back and found his earlier stuff and looked through. But I didn't learn about Thomas Young until just recently when he decided to write an open letter to President or former President George Bush and Dick Cheney, calling him out for being war criminals and talking about the Iraq War. He did this on Democracy Now! At the same time that he announced that he was going to take himself off of nourishment because he has to get food through a tube, feeding tube, and he was going to take himself off nourishment towards the end of May, beginning of June. Now, here we are. I do have some updates on him. I learn about this because we actually have a listener to Revelations Radio Network or Revelations Radio News who is a paralyzed Iraq war vet. And, you know, praise God, he, you know, reaches out to Thomas in a video format and then, hey, sends me this message. Hey, I just did this. If you get a chance, please pray for this guy. And I'm like, you know, so moved by this whole thing that I'm like, wow, I got to put out a podcast about this and try and spread some sort of awareness because I don't see anybody talking about it. And I began to get upset with the lack of coverage that Thomas has had by the mainstream evangelical movement. You know, the flag wavers, the ones who were pro-war, were not really, you know, holding a hard light up to the repercussions and fallout from the wars that were serving, or the wars that were perpetuating around the world. And I don't just blame Christians. I think this is the American people as a whole. We've been lulled to sleep by the media.
Yes, we have. Yep.
But no one, not Christian or otherwise, is making a huge deal, other than Democracy Now!, about Thomas Young. You know, on a day like Memorial Day, I think that we should remember Thomas Young. On a day, you know, so many days where I think that you know, he should be an issue, that he should be talked about, that the fallout from what's going on should be discussed in open forums. But, you know, we're called to do as much, you know, as Christians. You know, not only is the American public lulled to sleep, but why it's so much harder for me as a Christian to look around at the other Christians around me, we're held to a higher standard by Jesus' words himself. you know, look after the least of these, look, you know, visit the sick, feed the homeless, you know, do these things. But we're ignoring the repercussions that our own, you know, and I won't say we have caused, because I think our tyrannical government is out of control and doing whatever it wants anyway. But we're ignoring the repercussions from the actions of our country or our government overseas. And it's despicable. It's disgusting. And, you know, I think Thomas Young's a perfect example of that, you know. And if you could bear with me for just a second, I was going to read an update here.
Sure.
Just one sec here.
Yeah, because I was wondering what was going on with him, because I realized it is, you know, May has passed. It's June 2nd as we record this. So
yes, and I don't know what has happened to him. There it is. As far as I know, he hasn't gone off of his nourishment yet. One thing our show was able to do was put out his email. I got in touch with him through Twitter and got his email, and I asked if, you know, hey, can we? I have listeners that, you know, care about your story. Can I get your email so we can send you some emails of encouragement or whatever? And he was very cool about it. He said, sure, and he gave it to me. And so I put that on the podcast, and I prayed for him a couple times on the show, and encouraged people to write him and let him know that, you know, that they cared about him because he's kind of been ignored. So that's kind of going on, and I don't want to get too much into it because I don't want to share too many details that I shouldn't. But yeah. The gentleman Matt, who is a listener to our show, who put out the put out the video in response to him going off of nourishment, who is also paralyzed. Matt has actually got in touch with him and got a response and has started a dialogue about, you know, things that, you know, I won't discuss here because I don't have permission, but he has actually made some contact with him. I think a lot of the rest of us have sent emails and really haven't heard anything back, but I think that there's an interesting little update here. Where is this? I'll just have to paraphrase. I can't seem to find it right now. But
yeah, no problem.
He was, I think he did an interview with the Huffington Post or somebody reported on what he had said. And he said that, you know, he keeps hearing from Muslims that he has to turn to Allah. He keeps hearing from the Christians that he can't commit suicide and he needs to turn to Jesus. And he keeps hearing from the atheists that he has a strong, you know, message so he, you know, can't kill himself. Or, you know, I don't want to say kill himself, but go off of nourishment.
Yeah.
Because he has to, and he's being told what to do on all fronts, and it's hard for him to even understand or disseminate what people's motives are for this. Because he's being told, I understand where you're coming from. I understand your pain. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people understand the pain of being a paralyzed war veteran, even though they say they do.
No, I don't think so. Except for maybe the guy that is in touch with him, you know. He can relate very much so.
And he is the only one they get through. So that's, in my opinion, a reward or a good sign, at least, for just a little bit of time I've put into this and trying to further the awareness of a guy like Thomas Young. And, you know, and not to put Thomas Young on like a pedestal or anything, I think he's definitely worth talking about. But, you know, how many more Thomas Youngs are out there? You know, he just happens to be someone who has a very strong anti-war stance. Which is why he gets any of the press that he does. But what about somebody that doesn't necessarily have an anti-war stance or the draw of a show like Democracy Now, you know, to get on and read an open letter to the president? You know, I feel like that there's a lot of this in our country, a lot of wounded veterans. Again, you know, less than 30 years, 40 years after the Vietnam War, and again, we're going to have a bunch of wounded veterans who aren't going to be cared for and are going to be forgotten to the fringes of society. And that's where I feel like we got, as Christians, got to take up the slack. And hey, I'm talking to myself too. I've said evangelical Christians you know, several times in a derogatory sense, but you know, I need to work on myself in all these ways too, and in whatever way I can, you know, getting out there and feeding the homeless or visiting the sick and visiting people in the hospital and visiting, you know, people in prison, because we are called to something higher. So it's easy to point fingers, but you know, we all need to be doing those things in our own day-to-day life.
Yeah, same here. I wanted to ask you, Tim, you know, we one of the things you've talked about on the show, and you've talked about this with a couple of different people, one of which is Robert Hyde, who I've had on the show kind of the end of last year. And it's kind of this idea of Christian libertarianism, mm-hmm. or even Christian anarchism in a way. And, you know, just kind of to the best of, like, how you understand that, you know, what that to be. I know Andrew probably talks a lot about it. I can't remember the guy that you had on, the guy's name, he was an ex-Mormon, but he mm-hmm. seemed pretty adamant about not having any kind of, nothing to do with government, nothing to do with anything, you know, anything of the world, really.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting line. I don't know of, you know, I'm not sure I can. I'll do my best to kind of summarize. I think Andrew and Robert Hyde are kind of the libertarian perspective.
Yeah.
Definitely, you know, less. And I am too. I mean, I'm a libertarian at heart for sure, and probably a philosophical, at least, anarchist. You know, and they say the old joke, right? That, you know, the difference between a libertarian and an anarchist.
What's that?
About 3 years. you know, I think that as Christians, we basically, the rubric that we're already given is that, hey, the world has fallen, man has fallen, you know, turn to God, God is your answer, Jesus is your answer, tell other people about God, live according to God, you know, and listening to him and praying to him and staying in constant contact and prayer and whatnot with him, and that's going to make your life immeasurably better, you know, way better than, you know, any 10-step plan or whatever. It's not only going to make your life immeasurably better, but you're actually going to help other people in major ways. That's going to be way more rewarding than, you know, if you were to do it some other way or whatever. So what that tells me is that in a fallen world that everyone's fallen, and that we're basically just trying to turn to God. So I've kind of been turned on to the idea of anarchism, and I of course thought that that was just, you know, literally the picture in my mind was a guy wearing a ski mask in the street throwing a Molotov cocktail.
Right, right, right. Like,
that's anarchism. But
throwing the trash can through a window. You know?
Exactly. But no, yeah. It turns out that there are many people who I consider to be, you know, far beyond my intellectual ability who subscribe to this viewpoint. You know, for instance, like Lou Rockwell, James Corbett, a couple of people like that that, you know, really do. What's another one is, oh shoot, I forgot his name. He was on Future Quake several times. Will Grigg.
Yeah, you know, Will Grigg.
Will Grigg is another bit of, you know, he's an anarcho-capitalist. You know, there are many people who I can consider to be way, you know, intellectually superior to me who subscribe to this. So I started to kind of look into it at first thinking, oh, of course we need government. This is insane. But the more I kind of looked into it, the more I thought, you know, this actually makes sense in a very Christian way, that, you know, the whole world has fallen, so therefore why do we got people over anybody? It's only going to lead to bad situations. And you look back at the Old Testament, and I don't often like to use Israel as an example, because I think in this day and age, Christians like to turn to Israel as an example of how America is, at least the Old Testament Israel. And I think that's absolutely a false claim, as in that was a once in a ever situation where God was literally the head of the nation. So. But at that same time, once the Israelites started calling for a king, you know, what's God's response? you don't really want a king. You know, they're going to take 10%, and they're going to send your children to war, and then they're going to, you know, they're going to take, you know, some of your... And it's like, at this point, it's like, wow, 10%, we would just love to have that.
Yeah, really, right?
That'd be amazing. But I mean, so... You know, with God at the head of an individual's life, I'm more of an individualist, I guess. With God at the head of an individual's life, you know, I think that's a better recipe for government. And of course, you know, it's definitely not going to happen overnight. And I'm willing to entertain all sides of it and talk it through. I think these sort of things are good to talk through. But, you know, I'm kind of, I reserve the right to change my mind in the future, and that's just kind of where I am right now. I'm just absolutely disillusioned with the American system as a whole. I won't vote. I won't, I'm just not into, I'm not into it. I think it's, I think we give power to the beast with our voting and the way we spend our money and all these things. And, you know, I'm not sitting up here on my high horse like I'm so much better because I don't vote or whatever, because, you know, I still have all the popular electronics, and I still do spend my Federal Reserve notes on big corporations products and stuff. But I just think that the more that we can get away from that and get back to living on an individual level, the better we'll be.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we talk about the anarchist stuff is that I'm going to say that's probably a common occurrence up there in Seattle where you are. Get the guys throwing Molotov cocktails. And
you know, it's funny when this, you know, I think I talked about this on our show a few weeks back, but every year, it's like everybody looks to Seattle for the World Trade Organization riots, because it's funny, the first year I was here in 1999, I was here for like a week, and then there was a World Trade Organization riots. And
that was the big one, I think.
Yeah, that was the huge one, where somebody was actually killed, and it was a big deal. But now it's like, I don't know. It's just, it's so ridiculous. And the police state's gone so much further, and, you know, there's people who are, you know, and now anarchists are, they're looked at, you know, half the time they're wearing government-issue boots. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, agent provocateur. You know, and I was going to say, too, that, you know, I still vote, but I've just stopped Republican, Democrat, no more.
Sure. I respect that for sure.
Yeah. You know, kind of turn it a little bit towards, you know, kind of current events, you know, before we wrap it up. You know, what's kind of your idea of what happened with the Boston bombing thing?
Oh, man. You know, we actually kind of just talked a little bit about that on the show I'm about to put out for this last week. But
cool.
What aspect?
there's so many.
There's so many aspects to that.
It's become really confusing.
It has, and that's the part of the operation, right? That's part of the plan. We'll put out like 50 different stories, 18 different directions, and then, you know, no one will ever know what goes on except for now.
I gotta wonder if Alex Jones wasn't part of it.
Oh, you think so? How so?
I don't know. Maybe just somebody just throwing in some confusion.
Well,
because he was real quick to just jump the gun on the false flag stuff.
Yeah. I guess that's true. But on the other hand, I'm with them. My default reaction to anything that happens is false flag. Because if you look throughout history, it's, you know, that's what it is a majority of the time. You know, from what's his name? Was it Nero who burned Rome?
Right, Nero, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he burned it himself and blamed it on the Christians. I mean, it's, you know, so to have the default reaction, I don't blame him for that. But I think that there are so many different directions with this one. Number one, it's an absolute victory for the police state. They shut down Boston. Totally.
Yeah.
In a military style. What's that?
Pretty good sized city.
Pretty good sized city. And then that other, you know, town that was nearby or whatever. Made everyone go inside and then did house-to-house raids. I mean, if you were to put just, you know, secret police uniforms on those guys, that was, I mean, straight out of World War II, people looking for Jews.
Yeah.
It really was. And that's not an extreme statement. It's true. That's armed people in military uniforms pulling individuals out of their homes looking for a teenage boy. And, you know, we went with it. We went with it. You know, no outrage. I mean, that's one aspect.
Of course, I wonder if that wasn't just a test.
I feel like it was a litmus test of how far along are we. And it's a huge. I think that's the number one victory on the side of the government was we were able to shut down a whole town and go do house to house searches. Something that was, you know, would have been inconceivable just 10, 20 years ago. It was for one guy, you know. Anyway, so from there, I think that the there was a very interesting thing that we just talked about in our recent podcast, where the website 4chan, which is a hacker website. They also have a subreddit, 4chan or whatever. And they started aggregating all the pictures from the event. Now, that's one thing that we haven't really thought about, but in this day and age, there's cell phone cameras, there's security cameras. You can almost take an event that a bunch of people are at with phones and put together, you know. Hello?
Hey, okay, sorry about that. I don't know what happened. Something froze up. Okay, go with what you were saying.
Yeah, well, basically, it just kind of came out that there was military people there. And it ends up being, I think, craft services who were right there at the bombing. You know, which is extremely strange on top of the drills. Yeah. And, you know, there's a very interesting part of the subculture now, the conspiracy subculture, which is becoming more and more mainstream, by the way, which thinks that everything is fake all the time.
Yeah.
So now there's fake limbs and fake blood. And, hey, I'm not saying it's not true, but, I mean, it seems like that's the new default route as well. The whole thing's fake, and I think that loses credibility with the mainstream when you start to say, well, it was all, you know, crisis actors and stuff like that.
And that adds to the confusion. And the same thing happened with Sandy Hook.
Exactly.
See, I think there's plenty of dirty stuff that was going on with Sandy Hook, but that adds to the confusion when people were saying that the whole thing wasn't real.
Right.
That's probably not the answer. It probably was a setup. Somebody else went in there and killed those kids, or the guy was mind controlled, who knows? But some people were jumping to this extreme that the whole thing was just not real at all.
Sure. Yeah, and where does that leave us? It's like, then it discredits us. You know, the thing about that is, it's like, we don't even have to make stuff up like it's all not real. Like, there's enough admitted stuff to be mad.
Right.
Like, there's enough stuff, like, on record in these people's personal memoirs and that come out in news stories and that have been admitted during interviews and everything else to be plenty mad. And when we turn to those things, it just kind of discredits the idea of skepticism. And, you know, there's a weird tie-in I think we talked about, or I didn't talk about it, but might have played a part of it on our show, where Graham Fuller is an ex-CIA agent, or he is CIA, who had the uncle of the two brothers who said, of course, these guys are, you know, guilty, they're a couple of losers. Well, Graham Fuller is a CIA operative, and the uncle at one point called his home the home that Graham Fuller lived in. He was married to Graham Fuller's daughter. So, then, you know, that whole thing has some very deep CIA ties. Graham Fuller is also someone who was closely related to an imam who had, like, this $20 billion account has opened up different radical Islam, you know, mosques all over the world. And I don't want to say $20 billion, that's a lot. I think it was $20 million, something like that. But there's a lot of ties in there with the CIA and these two brothers. You know, of course, the one is captured, you know, and brought naked through the street and arrested. But then they said, no, that wasn't him. And then they're like, well, then he got run over by his own brother. And then his brother gets, you know, captured, but he's conveniently shot in the throat, so he can't ever talk about what actually happened. And if you go back and watch, like, I went back and looked at the kid's Twitter feed, and it's like, the tweets that he was sending out, he's an amazing intelligence agent if he had actually just committed the bombing and then sent some of the ones out he just sent out. Like, the guy, he sent out a tweet, you know, caught a lot of people out looking for these bombers or whatever out there. Be safe. You know, everybody stay careful. You know, be careful. Be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Some of his friends, we actually just read a story, I think, last week on our show. One of his friends was killed. You know, he actually, it was 2 years previous, but one of his friends was talking to the FBI. He was, and then basically he said the FBI was coming over to his house and he thought they were going to kill him. And he was like, I have a weird feeling about this. And then the guy ends up dead. Six FBI agents come to the house, and sure enough, they panicked when one little kid or 20-something-year-old guy panics, and they shoot him. And it's just, it's the thing about it is that I think that it's part of the game plan is to confuse everyone. And the deeper issues are the ones that we need to start wrapping our head around. Why is there a CIA agent you know, harboring the uncle of these terrorists, you know, supposed terrorists? Where does that work out? How is he related to what's going on in Turkey with the Operation Gladio and whatnot, and now there's a whole revolution taking place in Turkey. You know, these are very, very deep, hard to grasp things, but I think that's what we should be reaching for instead of fake blood. It's all fake. You know what I mean? It's like it seems like the conspiracy movement is trying to convince people that, hey, there's fake blood at this thing, instead of looking to the very clear admitted things, like that he lived with a CIA agent, that the uncle who came out on national television and was the darling of the media for 2 or 3 days saying they're losers and of course they did it. You know, he's a former CIA agent guy. And yeah.
And that's the guy that pretty much condemned them in the public eye. And you know, the guy that just got killed, you know, the FBI said that he came at him and they shot him 6 times.
Yeah. There's 6 men in one room and one young guy does something crazy and they all have, like, they shot him 6 times. I mean, any 6 people can restrain one guy. But that's not the way it comes out. The default reaction is to shoot him 6 times. Something fishy, of course.
See, my kind of working theory on all this is that I think what happened was is that possibly that these guys were going to be set up by the FBI. Just as we know that the FBI has done this so many times before. You know, the supposed Christmas tree bombing where they got the Somali kid that, you know, you basically know the story that they basically are the ones supplying the fake components, and they arrest the guy, and then the FBI comes out looking good. I think that's what they were going to do. And I think somebody messed up in Boston. Possibly that older brother actually maybe could have outsmarted them, gotten real components. Somehow he could have had some kind of connection with the CIA. Probably because of all the things of the kind of this little proxy war that's going on in the Caucasus, in Dagestan, in Chechnya, Georgia, that whole area, which is an area that most Americans couldn't even find on the map if they even tried.
Right.
And it's just this whole backdrop of just complete confusion, and we're never going to know the full story. Nobody's ever going to tell it. Just like Kennedy, just like 9/11. Does like any of this stuff. You're never going to know.
Yeah. Well, and to back up your story about the FBI setting people up, it just came out that the guy who did the Fort Hood shooting in Texas, remember that whole deal?
Yeah.
Turns out that he's received $279,000 in pay, military pay, since he's been imprisoned.
Well.
He's still getting paid. Kind of weird. Yeah.
Well, isn't he in a coma?
I'm not even sure.
I think he may be. I'm not sure. I'd have to look it up. But I think he was either paralyzed or he couldn't talk or, you know, and that whole thing was strange, too. I remember watching that unfold on TV.
And that story was so lame. It's like, was that the Iranian guy? No, that was a different one.
Palestinian.
Yeah,
he's Palestinian. And they said that, I remember saying that hearing that they had another gunman cornered. There's always a second guy or a third guy, and they always disappear.
That's right. That's right.
All it happened at Sandy Hook, too, when the cops went out out back. Two or three policemen running to the back of the school with their guns drawn. You could see it on footage from a helicopter, and that guy gets put in is yelling and screaming to parents, "I didn't do it, I didn't do it," gets put in the cop car. Don't hear anything about him. Who was he? Nobody knows.
That's right. Some of the most famous words in American history. I'm just a patsy. I'm not resisting arrest. I'm just a patsy. And that's over and over again you see that sort of thing. Another one that's interesting, Oklahoma City bombing, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
State Trooper Terrence Yankee, right down there in downtown Oklahoma City. My dad actually works right down there. I'm from Oklahoma. And he was just happened to be in the area. He's the first one on the scene. He talks about the ATF being on the scene, confiscating weapons, which were not supposed to be there at the site, confiscating different documents, whatnot. You know, he wrote a report. It was refused. He wrote another report. It was refused. He started talking about to his wife that he's being followed, this, and that. And, of course, he ends up in the middle of an Oklahoma field. And I think he shot himself. He cut his wrists, then locked his he cut his wrist, then locked the knife in the glove box of his own car. Then he walked out in the middle of the field with his wrist slit and shot himself in the head. So that's an interesting way to go out.
What I love is the guys that behead themselves. Those are my favorite. That's got to take some skill.
Yeah, yeah. There's the other guy, too. I can't remember his name, but the guy out of Gary Webb, who shot himself twice in the head.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the kid that was in the cop car that shot himself in the head.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that was us last year. That was a terrible story. Oh, my gosh. And the fact that the American public buys it. And that one doesn't make as big of a story as what was the one last year that everybody was talking about is the Trayvon Martin.
Yep.
And that actually can incite some sort of a strange, you know, racial divide or public unrest and divide and conquer, right? That can incite that. But the fact that the state would shoot a black kid in the back seat of a car, that's not going to incite very much violence. So that gets no coverage, right? That's not going to incite, sure, you know, dissent. We don't want that dissent to be incited, you know, because that's the state being wrong.
I watched this episode of a show called Missing. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those, like, Discovery Channel shows, you know, mm-hmm, true crime stuff.
I actually love those shows. I'm a junkie for those.
Yeah, me too. And there was a policeman in Florida. I think it was somewhere, it was Tampa, okay? He actually picks up this black guy, African-American guy, mm-hmm, who's actually from my hometown, Chattanooga, mm-hmm, actually picks him up. He's the last person seen with this guy. With this kid before he goes missing. I say kid, but he's like a 26, 27 year old guy. Is the last person seen with him. Okay? A year before, he picked up a Hispanic gentleman, Mexican guy, probably a legal alien, picked him up, and that guy disappeared too. And they're interviewing the police, the police chief, or the internal affairs, and he's saying something like, well, we don't really have any reason to believe that anything, you know, strange happened. Two people disappear in the custody, in this policeman, the last person known to have seen him, and he'd been already been caught making racial, making racial slurs on the recorded. Not to say that that's going to mean that he's necessarily going to kill somebody, but I mean, come on. It's unbelievable.
Well, you're starting to make arguments for anarchism. You better be careful.
But yeah, really, right?
You get a, you know, if you were to say a guy's not supposed to be able to come to your place of residence and kidnap you and take you away and force you to pay a bunch of money, you know, you would say that, you know, that's not, you know, that shouldn't be allowed. But at the same time, then an IRS officer, a policeman, you know, that's totally allowed because they have these costumes that they wear, and of course we got to obey that. So,
right.
But anyway,
thin blue line, Tim.
That's right. That's right. Well, that story is a good example, though. For some reason, we hold government officials to a different standard, you know. And there's so many excuses now. There's a one recently. Guy, a 74-year-old man, shot in his garage. People showed up, cops showed up, had been called to a robbery in progress, and showed up to the wrong house. Found a 74-year-old man in the garage and shot him. It ended up being his own house. Now, they told both stories that he feared for his life, that they feared for their life, and it was a mistake. But I don't understand. It has to be one or the other. They either was a mistake or they feared for their lives. But anyway, they're not held to the same standards. They'll probably be suspended with pay and then come back to work. That is the state being wrong, and we can't ever question that stuff.
Well, you know, they're keeping, you know, the Mary Jane off the street, and they're doing a good job of it, and just ridiculous.
Sure.
War on drugs is just...
it's a war on your rights.
Yeah, it's just been an excuse to institute fascism, in my opinion.
And to keep...
Get people addicted, and then you bring the drugs in, and then you support the drug cartels in Mexico or in Colombia, and then you get everybody addicted on it, and then you crack down on it. The one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing.
And you don't even have to look to the conspiracies that are involved in that to see what's really going on. You just have to look at family histories and look to, you know, the history of Yale, the history of Harvard. These schools were funded by opium traders. You know, the drug war has been going on for thousands of years. You know, and it's just continuing. It's just now that's supposedly illegal here, and you know, you got big banks like HSBC admitting to laundering $600 million in drug money. You know, that's how they keep their power. The drug money is the power. You know, in the banking elite. You know, where the George Herbert Walker Bush and his dad. You know, George Walker, or was it Walker Bush?
Prescott.
Yeah, Prescott. Thank you very much. They're, you know, their whole family lineage going back. You know, they're drug runners. That's what they do. George Poppy Bush. See, you know, that's another inside joke. Inside joke for the, you know, for those of us that don't, you know, are on the inside. That really is, you know, that for thousands of years, that's how those families have maintained power, and now they've just been able to make it illegal here to drive up the price and to fight your, you know, fight against your rights, to infringe on your rights.
And you know, I tell people this whenever they ask me something about this this kind of subject. I say, well, you know, hey, what did the guys do? The people at Yale, you know, the kind of the elite of this country, you know, they made their money through sometimes criminal means, like what you're talking about. They built schools, they built churches. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't think of the guy's name because I'm drawing a blank, but the big Colombian drug lord in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, with Pablo Escobar?
Pablo Escobar, thank you. What did he do for his city when he was making his money? He built churches. He built schools.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
It's the exact same thing. And it's not like classified history. If you go and look, these families that were doing that, you know, they were running the Victoria Clipper and the, what's the other one? Not the Victoria Clipper, but the Clipper and the British trading, what's the name of that ship? It was basically a monopoly on drugs.
British India Company?
Yes, yes, exactly. Yes.
You know, they go into the opium wars, and they got China addicted to their drugs, and then and that's how they almost took China over. Just with the time you got left, you know, we're almost out of time here.
Sure.
It's kind of late, but I wanted to ask you, you know, where can people get your show? Where can people listen to you guys?
Check out revelationsradionews.com. We got our website up there, and we try and put out a podcast episode every week.
Yeah.
About a weekly show. We're, you know, not necessarily out on a certain date. It's kind of whenever we can get it together. And I guess it's somewhat similar to this interview in that we just cover all kinds of bases, and some of them in depth and some of them not, but just trying to get a level-headed look at the news. I think that if you're a Christian, maybe check it out. It might encourage you to kind of look at things a little bit differently. If you're a non-Christian, I would also encourage you to check it out, because you know, we are generally just talking about the news, and we may touch on spiritual implications of things, but I don't think too often we're saying stuff that people aren't going to hear elsewhere. Or not, that's not necessarily true, but just it's not. It's not. It wouldn't be offensive for the non-Christian, if that makes any sense.
Gotcha. And I can highly recommend the show. It's one of my favorite podcasts to listen to. I listen to it. I try to listen to it on a weekly basis whenever they put out a new show. I think I've actually listened to it since show number one, and maybe that possibly. It was pretty early on, but just because of the, you know, I knew, you know, of you guys, and you know,
we had all met at one point, so that was cool.
Yep. Well, Tim, I want to thank you for coming on. You know, you've been a great guest, and stay on the line, because I'm just going to close this section out.
Excellent.
Talk to you a little bit off air. But
well, thanks again for having me on, and keep up the good work.
Well, thank you so much, Tim. It means a lot coming from you. And I'm gonna come back with a little closeout, but I'll be right back on Conspiranormal. Okay, I'm back on Conspiranormal, and just real brief. I'm not gonna take too long with this. just really want to thank Tim for coming on the show. I know everybody probably missed Luke and his extreme witticisms and his any additions he could have made, but felt that that was a good show anyway with Tim. Kind of felt like, you know, having another co-host. In about 2 weeks, I should have on the Tennessee Wraith Chasers again. They're going to come back on, and we're probably going to have on a probably have like a dual show where we have them on and another little group, which I think will be a fairly interesting little interview, and then just more kind of fun stuff from me and Luke. So I want to thank everybody for listening tonight. It was a good show, and we'll see you next week on Conspiranormal.
Life, but do you like me? Or could you ever be my wife? Do you love me?